born on the Nativity of Our Blessed Mother and celebrating 10 years on the air, The Winds of Change.
Marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good Monday afternoon. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., along with the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. And it is my pleasure to be filling in today for Father Anthony, as I do on most Mondays. Hope all of you had a good and safe weekend. And I feel like every Monday morning, those of you who are Chicagoans know what I'm going to be saying. We wake up on Monday morning to yet another wall-to-wall coverage of violence and looting and shooting in Chicago, this time Michigan Avenue and State Street and Oak Street and Goose Island. Again, those of you who are not Chicagoans, those are sort of the upper-end shopping areas in our city. Hundreds of people wishing to cause mayhem and steal descended upon those areas between 12 midnight and 5 a.m. from what I know on the news, and between 2 and 4 a.m. there was a rather significant exchange of gunfire between the police and looters. So very distressing, quite a bit of property damage, even to places that really aren't targets for looters generally, like Gina Giorgetti's restaurant, which is a Chicago institution, family owned for decades and decades. Their store, or rather their restaurant, was demolished just for the sake of vandalism, it appears, because it doesn't seem like very much was taken. Liquor stores, of course, electronic stores. There were cars pulling up to the Apple Store on Michigan Avenue, popping their trunks, and people just loading things into them and taking off. And so many of those stores had just recently reopened and restocked. And so here are these retailers. Once again, you couldn't blame them if they wanted to leave the city after this happening for a second time. So everyone, please pray for peace in our city and, an end to this violence and protection for our police officers and for wisdom for the mayor and for the superintendent of police to make the best decisions about how to move forward to protect the people who live in this city and the people who work here. So I hope next Monday I won't have to open it up again with that same prayer request. It has been a very long summer already. And again, it's always the prayer and hope of everyone here at Winds of Change that our listeners are doing well and are safe, both from the coronavirus and from the violence that seems to be plaguing our city. So we're going to open up today. We got a very interesting show today. We're going to open up by talking about a benefit for the Chastity Education Initiative of the Archdiocese of Chicago. And of course, it's a benefit I'm very happy to promote because it's going to be honoring and featuring the life and legacy of Cardinal Francis George. And joining me on the line is Mary Louise Hengzabah, who is one of the coordinators of this benefit, this virtual benefit happening tomorrow night. Mary Louise, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mary. Good to talk with you.
It's nice to speak with you, Mary Louise. And so why don't you start by telling us a little bit about the Chastity Education Initiative, because you really were the person at the Archdiocese who spearheaded this program from the very beginning and you know, created something that hadn't existed previously in the Archdiocese. So tell me where you got the idea for that. Listeners, Mary Louise is too modest to tell you, but Mary Louise was a former Miss Wisconsin and was also a finalist in the Miss America contest and is an opera singer as a co-vocation, I would say, along with being a wife and mother. And so she is a woman of many talents, but one of her great interests is chastity education. So Mary Louise, why don't you talk a little bit about the program and how you decided to get it started?
Well, it was an interesting thing, Mary, because I had, when I was Miss Wisconsin, I had spoken to teens all over the country about abstinence until marriage or chastity when I was in faith-based schools, abstinence in the public schools, but basically the same message of purity, of sexual purity, and, you know, what a great response the platform received. Young people were so excited about it, and so then after my year, I'd moved to Chicago to continue speaking while I was also studying with a voice teacher at Northwestern, and I wrote a book which Cardinal George endorsed, and then he had said to me, you know, we should get you into the schools in Chicago. And I said, well, yeah, you could, like, hire me part-time. And he's like, no, do you know how many schools and parishes we have? He said, we need to have a big program for this. And that was sort of how it all came about. So then when I became the Respect Life Director, he had said, you know, I want to see a big program for this, but we don't have any money to pay for it. So you have to make it self-funded, and there will be good people who will be willing to give.
Because there really wasn't. I mean, there was sort of a, you know, hodgepodge of smaller speakers who talked about chastity and pro-life issues kind of combined. But I think at the time, too, Mary Louise, if I recall correctly, the catechetical books, the textbooks that dealt with the issue of chastity and abstinence until marriage, that sort of thing, they were really wanting in terms of laying out church teaching in a clear and convincing manner.
Yes, you know, you hit the nail on the head, Mary. There was a lot of stuff out there, but it wasn't very cool. It was
right. It was very nerdy.
Like,
oh.
Yeah, exactly. After reading this stuff, it's like, this is so square. Like, I don't know, even.
Yeah.
That is so true. So we were very blessed because I had people like Kathleen Sullivan, who started Project Reality, who had some really pioneering ideas about bringing this message in a cool way, and also Jason Everett, who brought theology of the body with all of its, you know, robust Catholic teaching in a very approachable way to young people. So so we were using things from Project Reality as far as curricula, and then we also bringing that to the school, and then we would supplement that with speaking on theology of the body, so the students would get both workbooks as well as presentations. And then also we brought in Jason Everett many years, and the program continues today with these great materials and even more materials that have since come out on theology of the body for young people. And it's exciting to see how much Dawn Fitzpatrick's leadership and Ray Pingoy, who has been at the Archdiocese since I was over 10 years ago, what great stuff they're doing with bringing the theology of the body and the ECHO retreats now for high school and college students, from which we've even had vocations to the priesthood and religious life from young people who have gone through these retreats. So
right.
There's been so much fruit that has been born. And really, when you look at the legacy of it, it comes from, you know, these early discussions with Cardinal George about getting the theology of the body into the schools and into the parish religious education program. So it's exciting, and even to hear from young people saying, like, oh, like Miss Wisconsin, she told me not to have sex. You know, I mean, I wish it would be a more robust memory than that, but that's still pretty good, like, you know.
Right. Well, like, you know, God did give you that. Yeah, when you think, I mean, you were a finalist, so it's not like you didn't come with some kind of street cred, so to speak, you know, for younger people who, you know, they don't, the chastity message has to be presented in a way that encourages kids to do the right thing out of self-interest, you know, and I know that sort of course, it's always out of interest in pleasing God and doing his will, but, you know, my mother always used to say, you know, God gives you rules for a reason, and the reason is to make you happy. And
right.
If you know that this was, you know, in the same way you would, you know, caution kids not to use drugs and drive drunk and et cetera, it's not that sex is a bad thing. It's a very sacred thing. And you want to save it for the person who God has already chosen for you, and you want, you know, your wedding night to be special. You know, I'll never forget, I was with a friend, and we were at a wedding reception, and her parents happened to be at the reception as well. And, you know, I think it was about, now this was back in my maybe late 20s, but, you know, at about midnight, I'm practically falling asleep on the table. I'm getting ready to go. And the bride and groom were still up there dancing. And my friend's father said, you know, he said, the sad thing is, he said, so many of these weddings now, the couple has nothing to look forward to. In this particular case, the couple had been living together. And so, and we're doing the right thing by getting married. But he said they have nothing to look forward to tonight. So, of course, at midnight, they're still at their own reception, you know?
No kidding. So, Brian couldn't wait to whisk me off the floor. I think I left my own reception at, like, 10 o'clock.
I didn't even get
to eat the cake. Come on, man. Yes. You're absolutely
no,
right.
No, I have a friend who tells a similar story, very funny, about how embarrassed she was. And he was like, I'd been waiting 2 years. I wasn't waiting one more minute. And it, like, I think they had literally just, like, cut the cake, had a bite of it, and he's like, we're going, bye. And she didn't say goodbye to half the guests. So anyway, it was very funny. So
Exactly. But it is such a special thing to wait, even for couples who had been sexually active, to be able to reclaim that, to say, hey, you know what? Let's see if our relationship is, what is our relationship based on? Is it based on a true friendship and love for each other, or is it just based on physical intimacy?
Yeah.
And then from there, so that's where chastity is even very helpful for couples today. And that's part of the message, because when we go into the schools, we know that some of these young people maybe haven't been living pure lives, but that's okay. They can leave that behind, and they can make a new beginning, and they can reclaim chastity. So it's a message for everybody, regardless of what choices they have made in the past. But the program continues to get a great response, and we're excited about this virtual event that's tomorrow night at 7 p.m. And that, you know, we'll be watching Glorious Lives. We'll be watching most of the film of Glorious Lives. It's sort of an abridged version.
Right.
And we'll be talking about the program, and we're going to have a great panel then discussing Cardinal George's legacy, including Bishop Barron. So it's going to be really wonderful.
Yeah, now that is a coup that you all managed to pull off, to get Bishop Barron for anything, given the many demands on his schedule. For those of you who don't know Bishop Robert Barron, he is the auxiliary bishop of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, but much better known for his books, his incredible teaching videos on YouTube, and his Word on Fire program, which has really helped to bring a greater understanding, particularly, I think, to millennials, of what the church teaches and why. And he and Cardinal George were quite close, and they lived together for a while at the Archbishop's residence. And so he got to know him not only, you know, as a teacher and as a theologian and as a pastor, but also as sort of a housemate and eventually a friend. And I know Bishop Barron was one of the last people to speak to the Cardinal before he died. And so I myself am very much looking forward to hearing what he has to say. And the documentary, can you tell us a little bit about Glorious Lives and the documentary for those who might not be familiar with it?
Yes, you know, it's just, it's about Cardinal George's life. And he lived such an extraordinary life, because he was stricken with polio at a young age, and he went on to overcome the challenges. There were doubts he could even be ordained a priest, and he met great discouragement even at a young age, and he overcame all of that and went on to be really one of the greatest cardinals, I believe, of modern times. He was the president of the USCCB, was highly regarded by all of the other cardinals. As you know, Mary, and you're in the documentary.
Right, very briefly.
Wonderful words of wisdom about his life. But I mean, when you watch the documentary, it's like a who's who of not just American Catholicism, but also even, you know, great people in Chicago talking about the great things that Cardinal George did. So for the church and for culture and understanding our culture, you know, he was so prophetic to what we are seeing today. He predicted it. I mean, really, when you look back at his life and what he said, he predicted kind of the unrest that we're seeing now in our society. And his books even talk about what the answer is to that.
Right, exactly. And, you know, there's just an hour or two almost doesn't even begin to do the cardinal justice, given his so many, I don't want to say complicated person he was. I don't mean that in the sense of being a difficult person. I mean in the sense that he had such a rich, incredible, fulfilling life. And I've been, you know, it's been interesting because he was very much involved with the National Catholic Partnership on Disability because, as you mentioned, you know, was diagnosed with polio at a very young age when he was in eighth grade. And because of that, had, you know, was in a leg brace. And so he was very limited physically. He applied to the seminary here in the Archdiocese of Chicago and was turned away because of his disability. And the concern of the priests at, you know, at the time, high school seminary, that he, because of his brace, he wouldn't be able to navigate the stairs easily, and there were no elevators in those days. And so the seminary that he went to downstate was kind of like a ranch-style building. And so the head of the high school program came out to visit his parents and told him, if you can walk from this end of the living room to the other end of the living room, we'll take you. And of course, he could do that with no problem. So, you know, he didn't let his disability or his physical limitations limit anything he did. And he was just such a gifted intellect. You know, as some of you listeners know, I had the privilege of serving as his executive assistant for many years, and I just wish I'd written more things down, you know. But I, with a new push, seemingly, for assisted suicide in California, what we're now calling physician-assisted death, we're going to try to clean that up a little bit, too, like we have with abortion, to make it sound prettier. You know, I think his prophetic voice on how the disabled, if we don't stop this culture of death, they're always the first targets, right? They were the first targets of the Nazi regime, disabled, including mentally people who were mentally disabled and physically disabled. And, you know, making sure that very clear voice that he had is still being heard today. And it's how do people attend this? Because I know it's virtual, obviously, because of COVID. How can people tune into it?
Yeah, so anybody who has an internet connection can tune in, and it's free. So to register, you can just go to the website respectlifechicago.com.
Okay.
So just go to www.respectlifechicago.com, and then there's a square with Cardinal George's picture. Just click on that.
Okay.
And it will take you to a place where it says register here. And then they'll send you a link for tomorrow night.
Okay.
So it's from
excellent.
7 to 9 p.m. And don't worry, like, we're not going to be watching you. So some people are like, is this a Zoom call? Do I need to dress
right,
up?
Right, right.
Not really, no. It's going to be broadcast through YouTube and Facebook. So you'll be able to see me, but I won't be able to see you. So if your kids are misbehaving or you need to go and come back or whatever, that's fine. It's very flexible. But we'll open, Dawn will give a little overview of the Castiet Initiative and some of the of its achievements very briefly with Damon Owens, whom I forgot to mention. So the panel
he's the MC for the event tomorrow.
Yes, that's right. Damon Owens, who's a renowned expert on theology of the body and marriage issues. He runs the marriage ministry Joyful Ever After, a highly acclaimed marriage ministry that is nationwide, has a nationwide reach, but he'll be the MC. And so then we'll watch the film, and then following that, Bishop Barron, Father Dan Flens, who is Cardinal George's personal secretary for many years. Yes, and myself, we will then talk about the Cardinal's life and legacy and parts of the film. So it's going to be a lot of fun and a great exchange of ideas and thoughts about someone who's really beloved. You know, when I think about Cardinal George sometimes, I just tear up because he was so great, and we were so blessed to have him as our shepherd. So anybody who loved him or even just liked him, you'll want to tune into this evening to just enjoy reminiscing because it's been 5 years since he passed away.
I know, it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to believe that. And
as you
mentioned, not only will you have Damon Owens as the MC, but you yourself will be there, and then Bishop Barron, who, as I mentioned earlier, lived with the Cardinal in his residence, and then Father Dan Flans, who was his longtime priest, secretary, and MC, Master of Ceremonies, and so would really be the person who would have had the most intimate knowledge of the Cardinal, cared for him in his final illness like a son. And, I've done a couple of these presentations over the last year because of the five-year anniversary. And it's been interesting to me how at every one, something new comes out, like some new story someone had. And in fact, I was up at a meeting up in La Crosse, Wisconsin last week, and was speaking with a bishop who was telling me this would have been just a few months before the Cardinal died, was at his installation. And he said, he was so sick from the chemo just before we started, he vomited all over himself. I said to him, Your Eminence, you don't have to stay. Please go back to, let's get you a room. Please go back and you can rest. And he said, no. And Father Dan brought a clean change of clothes and on they went. He was determination, bottled into a human form. And if he committed to something, he did it. So, again, Mary Louise, would you give that link again for people?
Yes. So it's www.respectlifechicago.org. Or if you just go to another link is archchicago.org. So if you just go to the Archdiocese of Chicago's website or respectlifechicago.org or .com, and just click on the picture of Cardinal George there, and then it says Celebrating Cardinal George. You just click on his picture, and you can register for this free event tomorrow night from 7 to 9 p.m. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be wonderful with Bishop Barron and Damon Owens and Father Dan Flans and myself, and viewing this film of the Cardinal's life and just reminiscing about how great he was and how great his legacy continues to be and how his work continues to live on and change lives.
It does, absolutely. And his intercession, I know, has been very powerful. I probably, a month doesn't go by at a time without someone telling me a story about praying to Cardinal George for something and getting a very quick answer to prayer. So, I gave a Lenten reflection in Cincinnati to their Cincinnati Catholic Women's Group and left my laptop on the plane at Southwest. And Southwest is normally really, really good about, helping people track down their lost items. And I was getting nowhere, and all my talks were on that laptop and pictures of my children. And I was standing in this is like a week later, we still hadn't found it. And I was standing in my kitchen. I have a little picture of him on my windowsill so I can talk to him while I'm doing the dishes. And I looked at it and I said, what are you doing up there? I need that laptop. I was really, mad at him. And about 30 minutes later, I got a call from Southwest saying they had found it. So that's just one little story. Yeah. So
incredible.
I had just kind of given up hope. I thought someone must have just taken it. And so he works quickly. Threats help, as I learned, or at least a stern talking to. I really encourage people to ask for his intercession because, I think Bishop Gettert, who also lived at the residence with him, and Bishop Gettert doesn't throw terms around like this lightly, but he said, I absolutely think he's a saint. If he didn't go straight to heaven, there's no hope for any of us because of the level of his suffering, which I think a lot of people don't know, and how much he suffered, especially in those last couple months. So, Mary Louise, I pray and hope it all goes well tomorrow. I'll be tuning in myself and listeners. I will be posting the links to the Winds of Show homepage so that if you didn't have a pencil in the car to write this down, please, it will be well worth the 2 hours, almost like a little retreat, I think, focusing on the life of someone who is not a formal saint yet, but we all believe is a saint. So, Mary Louise, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with the event tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Mary.
God bless.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Winds of Change invites you to join the Rosary Rally on Saturday, October 10th at 12 noon in front of the outdoor cross at St. Stanislaus Kostka Church. Join us as we join people around the country praying for peace, as Our Lady of Fatima requested. In case of rain, we will meet under the portico outside of St. Stan's School. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Join us Saturday, October 10th at noon for the Rosary Rally for Peace.
winds of change.
The winds of change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church. And a security person will be on site to register and to participate in the Holy Mass. And for more information, go to ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
And welcome back. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And thank you for staying with us till the second half of the hour. We have a wonderful guest with us to talk about his new book. It's Tyler Rowley, and the name of the book is Because of Our Fathers, 23 Catholics Tell How Their Fathers Led Them to Christ. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for giving us so much of your time today. I've been reading through the testimonies of these people that you're featuring in your book, and you know, with every chapter, you're just so amazed and touched by the impact that the role of the fathers of very well-known Catholics, people like Father Paul Scalia, whose father was the Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, my friend Mary Hassan, whose father, Charlie Rice, was a beloved law professor at the University of Notre Dame, and Christopher Cech, and who, along with his brother, Father Paul Cech, are very well-known in Catholic evangelical circles, and even Father Rocky, you really put together. There's no backbenchers here. This is a really terrific lineup. Tyler, what inspired you to write this book?
What inspired me was I was actually listening to Catholic radio one morning, Friday morning, driving to work, and there was a priest on named Father Gerald Murray. And Father Murray wasn't on the show the previous Friday, because he was burying his father. And so, So this particular morning, he was talking all about his dad. And very poetically and beautifully, and one story that he told that morning was when he, as a 7-year-old boy, he realized that his father was going to Mass every morning, and not just going to work every morning, was actually going to Mass before he was going to work, which was totally unbeknownst to the youngster. So he asked his dad, he said, you know, you're going to Mass every single day before work? Why do you do that? We only have to go to church on Sundays. And his father said, I guess, you know, technically we only have to go on Sunday, but I love being with Jesus in the Eucharist every single day, to start my day. And it was, first of all, that story just kind of gives you chills just thinking of it. And then Father Murray will tell you it was sort of the initial spark that led him to be very curious about his faith and to trust it and to realize that, you know, the strongest person in his life was, you know, living in this humble submission to God, not just on Sundays as like a family event, but as a dedicated, worship that he was doing every single day.
Right.
So he'll tell you that, you know, that was kind of the impetus to his priesthood. So when I heard that, I remember specifically my mind shot back to an email maybe a couple years before that my priest had sent me, and it was about this study about the generational transmission of faith. It was a study in Switzerland that showed this really drastic difference between how parents follow the religiosity of their fathers much more than they do their mothers. And I talk about that study in the book, and the numbers are really staggering. I almost couldn't believe it as I was reading it. But then I started to think about, you know, a study is a study, but then you personalize it and you think about all the people in your life. And I just did like this mental Rolodex, you know, one by one. And, you know, 90-95% accuracy, you could trace you know, either a family member or a friend's strong faith or lack of faith to that of their father.
Right.
And it just, it rang so true in my life. I
mean, right.
Very, very, very true. So when I heard Father Murray's testimony, and then I thought about, you know, how statistically accurate this is, and then also how it's ingrained into church teaching. You know, mm-hmm. this is what, I mean, this isn't like Tyler Rowley stumbled upon something. I mean, the church has been teaching this for thousands of years. So when I just said, there's got to be so many more awesome stories like Father Murray's, I bet if I just started talking to people, they would tell me, you know, all of, they would be willing to talk about their father, and they would be, you know, readily admit that their father was the most important person that, that made them who they are today, especially in terms of their spiritual life. So
right.
I just started, you know, researching and calling people. And what's funny is that the whole, so that whole thesis was proven true through my research for the book. So if I was wrong, I would have had a hard time finding these people, because
right.
if you think about it, you know, I'm thinking of people who I know are committed Catholics, but I don't know anything about their dads necessarily.
Right.
But, you know, lo and behold, you know, one by one, you know, the person says, oh, of course, my dad was the greatest guy I've ever known. He took his faith very seriously. He's the one who was responsible for me, you know, taking the faith seriously or joining the priesthood or being a Catholic apologist. That was really neat how the whole thesis of the book was proven true through the initial conversations with these people. And then they were also, because it's so true that the father is so integral to their spiritual life, they're also grateful. They're just like naturally grateful. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, almost, you know, 9 out of 10 people who had a relevant story said, yeah, of course, I owe it to my dad, and I'd be more than happy to contribute an essay about him. So that's what the book is. The book is an essay of different men and women from across the country who tell, you know, the things that their father said and did that they remember, the type of person he was that made them Catholic, that kept them Catholic, basically.
Right, yeah. Right. And, you know, it's interesting that the first chapter I read, just because I'm, as a lawyer, I'm a big fan of Justice Scalia's writings and was a great admirer of him. And so I skipped ahead to the Scalia chapter before some of the others, because I wanted to see what
sure.
his son, Father Paul Scalia, wrote about him. And it's interesting, he begins with the story of his father taking him to see St. John Paul II say Mass in Chicago in Grant Park. And I was at that Mass myself as a 8th grader.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, it was, I don't think there were many Chicagoans who were Catholics who were not crammed into Grant Park that day. It was well over 1 million people. And it was a beautiful day in October. It was quite warm. And he's talking about how his father put him up on his shoulders and gave him his beloved opera glasses so that he could see the Pope. I mean, and even, you know, people went in the middle of the night to camp out. You couldn't get anywhere near him. Such was the size of the crowds. And, of course, Chicago has the largest native Polish population outside of Warsaw. There are more Poles who live in Chicago than in all of Warsaw, people from Poland. So, of course, you know, they kind of had first dibs, as we would say here in Chicago, on seats. So, it made me remember, you know, kind of a very funny story from his homily, if you could call the homily funny, but it was a beautifully done homily. And listeners, if you've never listened to the homily that Father Paul Scalia gave at his dad's funeral Mass, it's well worth the 12 minutes to Google it. But he talked about how his father, and he did it not in the, I don't want to say it was a guise, his father went to confession, I think, every month. And but with all these politicians, you know, many of them pro-abortion, sitting there in the National Cathedral in front of him, he talked about how his dad went to confession and mistakenly went into his son's confessional one time. And then when he realized that it was Paul hearing confessions that day, he said he exited rather quickly. And he said, we were both relieved. We were both relieved. But I thought that was that was really masterful, without talking about and saying something like, you know, my father recognized himself as a sinner, just simply by saying my father went to confession every month. And here's a little funny story. So that was really kind of touching for me to read. And it just, again, brought me back to that moment. The Scalia kids in general, I think, you know, and they were a big family, I think 8 or 9 children. And but he always had time for them. And, you know, I think back, there was a book that came out about 25 years ago called Fatherless America, written by a sociologist named David Blanken. Mission Horn. And, you know, I remember reading it at the time, and it went through the impact of children growing up in homes without a father. And, you know, this weekend in Chicago, just overnight, if you haven't seen the headlines, we had an incredibly devastating night of rioting and looting and vandalism. Again, this is the second time we've had, I mean, Michigan Avenue, which would be our prime upper end shopping area, just devastated. It looks like a tornado went through the street. And this is kind of, Michigan Avenue is sort of Chicago's jewel, right? It's the most well-known, but also the most beautiful street that we have. I mean, just cars pulling up in front of the Apple store and people jumping out, breaking the windows, filling their trunks and leaving. Beloved, you know, family restaurants were just vandalized for the sake of being vandalized. No one took anything, but they just smashed windows. And I have a black pastor friend, a Protestant black pastor friend, who ministers on the South Side. And I asked him, was actually on the show, and we were talking about this, and this was before this rioting started. And I said, you know, what's your take on this? And why are the gangs, why have they become such a literally lethal force and destructive force in our city? And he instantly said, 85% of African-American children are now born out of wedlock. And you can't tell me that doesn't have anything to do with it. These young boys have to have a father in the home setting the example and sort of being a counter force, if you will, against rebellion and aggression. And, you know, he's one of six. And he said, you know, his father was a truck driver. His mom stayed at home with them. He said, we were not a well-to-do family, but my dad was home every night. And we had dinner as a family. And we boys knew we couldn't, that there was a force to be contended with if we stepped out of line. And he said, not one of my sisters got pregnant before they were married, and not one of us boys impregnated anyone. We all got married first, and he, you know, two of his brothers are also now in Protestant ministry. But even so, you know, your book really goes into the spiritual level, but it doesn't that trickle down as well into the practical level? Did you find that, you know, in the essays that you compiled?
Yeah, so I actually cite David Blinkenhorn's book because that's one of the best studies that have been done on fatherless America. And so I cite him in my introduction. And one of the main points of the book, I go into briefly, there's probably two or three pages in my introduction in which I go into exactly what you were just talking about how all the sociological effects of not having fathers in the household. And I think I say something to the effect of, if ever sociology yielded a conclusive truth, it is this, that children suffer greatly when fathers are not in the home.
Yeah.
That point is so undeniable at this point that I didn't think it was my place to even really delve into that part of it. If you don't believe that at this point, then you're not going to be convinced. Fathers...
Right.
Just from a sociological standpoint, when we're talking about high school dropout rates and suicide and getting abortions and all of that stuff is tied to fatherlessness, there's no doubt.
Yes.
What I say in the book is, having admitted that as a culture, we have to then now think about the spiritual lives of children. So if a father is so integral to the natural life of his child, then it would only make sense that he's integral to the spiritual life of the child. And I'm talking to, you know, this book is for, could be for anybody, but I'm talking in my mind, when you're writing something, you usually have like an audience in mind. And my audience in mind is this 2015, there was a Pew study that was done on American Catholics. It said 27% have left the faith. Another 13% largely don't practice, but they still self-identify as Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that 13% that I'm really trying to speak to. And my message to them is simply this. You are on a path where your children are going to almost completely lose the faith. You probably had them baptized, but by the time they're adults and they have children, they're going to completely have lost the faith. And your grandchildren will not be baptized, will know nothing about Jesus Christ, will not have a prayer life, will not have a relationship with God. And you, as a Catholic, as a self-identifying Catholic, there's something that's still there where you want to say you're Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
You need to think about your children and your grandchildren, because they're going to have, the statistics show it, they're going to have no relationship with Jesus Christ. So So think about all the men who came before you, your father, your grandfather, your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. I mean, your Catholic identity likely goes back hundreds, if not thousands of years. So you have to answer the question, why are you giving this up? Why are you going to be the one in your whole family tree that is responsible for your family, your children, your grandchildren, losing the Catholic faith? Because that's what you're going to do for them. You're going to lose the Catholic faith, and it's going to be your fault. Because your children are hardly going to be responsible for not loving something that you never taught them about.
Right.
So so I use the sociological effects to kind of make the point to these fathers that, you know, even if, you know, okay, let's say you're a good father and you are in the home. You stayed married to mom. You raised your kids. You gave them a good middle-class upbringing in America. Okay, but if you're not giving them the spiritual life, that's going to die. You know, they're going to be dead. In that sense,
yeah.
I try and make the case, and through the other stories, try and make the case that the faith is worth fighting for your family, because ultimately it's true. Like ultimately, the thesis of this book is: sure, traditions are passed on by fathers. That's true. But the reason the Catholic tradition is so important is because it's true. Because when your kids, you know, are suffering later in life, through all the ways that human beings suffer, are you really going to hand them the shoulder of the world to cry on? This insane secular world, is that what's going to give them comfort, or is the truth of Jesus Christ and the message of Catholicism, the teachings of Catholicism, is that going to give them comfort?
Right.
And through these stories and these witnesses, I think that type of Catholic, that Catholic that fits into that 13%, will walk away thinking, at least, you know, man, I gotta give them something more, so we don't lose this.
Right. I mean, you know, the solace and the direction, and you know, it's not even just sort of the knowledge, but it's the, you know, every single marriage is going to hit a rocky spot. You know, it could be illness, it could be a wayward child. And, you know, my mother had a saying she would often use. She would say, I don't, you know, if there was a tragedy, we would say on the news or whatever, she would say, I don't know what people without faith do. I don't know where they turn.
Exactly.
So I think that you lay that out very beautifully in this assortment of essays. We're going to go to a break. And when we come back, I'd like you to talk about maybe the essays. And I know I'll give you time to think about this over the break, but a couple of the essays that particularly touched you when you read them. So listeners, please don't go away. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in for Father Anthony today and listener supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Winds of Change invites you to join the Rosary Rally on Saturday, October 10th at 12 noon in front of the outdoor cross at St. Stanislaus Kostka Church. Join us as we join people around the country praying for peace as Our Lady of Fatima requested. In case of rain, we will meet under the portico outside of St. Stan's School. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Join us Saturday, October 10th at noon for the Rosary Rally for Peace.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Here is an important message from Winds of Change. The upcoming election could be a turning point for the future of the United States. The pillars of our faith are the sanctity of life and the sanctity of marriage. We can't tell you who to vote for, but we can tell you, as a Catholic, to be registered and to get out and vote your faith.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school.
St. Stanislaus Kostka School has in-person and virtual learning plans for the 2020-21 school year, and scholarships are available. For a virtual tour or more information of St. Stan's School, call 773-278-4560 or 773-270-1553. To see what St. Stan's School has to offer, visit ststandschicago.org. That's ststandschicago.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, faith, virtue, valor, an expressway to excellence.
Hello at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. And it is my pleasure this hour to be speaking with Tyler Rowley, the author of a new book, Because of Our Fathers, 23 Catholics Tell How Their Fathers Led Them to Christ. And Tyler, before the break, I asked you if there were any particular essays that really moved you or gave you a new way to think about something. I know that's kind of a not fair question because every essay stands alone in this book as worth reading. So this is not to rank one as better as another. But was there any of them that, you know, just where the story was for you so interesting that you were like, wow, I wasn't expecting this?
Sure. So do you mind if I read an excerpt from
one
of them?
No, please. Please do.
Okay. So this I thought this paragraph gets to the heart of what the book is about. This is from Father Rocky's book.
Yes.
So he says this, he's talking about his father. He says, one day on the beach of New Guinea near New Hollandia, enemy shell fire descended upon my father's platoon. This is World War II. Many were wounded, some were killed, and my father, perhaps shielded by a coconut tree or perhaps with his hand in his pocket holding his rosary and recalling his wife back home praying for him, was left untouched. He did, in fact, credit his safety to the rosary and the powerful protection of our Blessed Mother. That story made a deep and lasting impression on me. How could it not? A field captain with extraordinarily strong hands, big muscles, and a quick, calculating mind found nothing to be ashamed of in his devotion to the Blessed Mother. He did not wear his religion on his sleeve. He did not force it on others. He just lived it. So on the day St. John Paul II ordained me a priest for Opus Dei in Rome, my father took me aside on the steps of St. Peter's. As we looked out over the plaza, he placed in my hand the rosary he had carried with him through the war. What a cherished and unforgettable gift, something that I'm clearly not worthy to have. So I pick that because I think very bluntly Father Rocky puts it that what made such an impression on him as a young boy was that, again, the strongest man in his life, and that's just what boys believe about their dads. You know, my 5-year-old son thinks that I'm the best and the strongest, guy in his life. And when he's looking at his dad, he's amazed that this man, you know, goes down to his knees and clutches, you know, something called a rosary, you know, that's about a devotion to a woman.
Right.
You know, that's shocking. To a young boy, and it says something about humility. It says something about faith, and it was just you can kind of glean that point from Father Rocky's his essay that this warrior, literally a warrior, was in a time of war, was clinging to Mary.
Right.
Now, and that makes him and it makes him wonder, you know, what this is. And it's nothing to be ashamed about, especially in a culture that we've lost so much of the battle-like ferocity of Catholicism. You know, we used to speak much more about the militantism of Catholicism, and that doesn't mean, you know, going around conquering people. It means conquering yourself like a soldier, you know, training yourself in virtue, and doing that like St. Paul says, like with the armor of God, you know.
Right.
So that's made alive through Father Rocky's father, this warrior with a rosary. So I really liked that. And then the first essay I put in the book, there's a reason I put this essay first. It's by a man named John Castillo.
Uh-huh.
And John Castillo is the father of Kendrick Castillo, who Kendrick was 17 years old when he was killed in a school shooting last year, in May 2019. And Kendrick was this really, you know, very, you know, for our culture, you know,
a model stand-up kid, right? Like, I remember he was a Boy Scout, I think, if I remember correctly.
Boy Scout. He loved hanging. He couldn't be a knight, but he was always hanging out with the Knights
of Columbus. That's right.
Very active in his church, very devout. You know, strangely so in our culture for this young teenager. But when his two classmates, one classmate in his room comes in with a gun ready to execute the whole class. You know, it's Kendrick, who has all this built-up virtue from his dad and his grandfather, who were two great, Catholic men. And he's the one who rushes the shooter, pins him up against a whiteboard, and gets shot in the heart,
right,
and dies. And John talks about Kendrick, but John also talks about his father, right, because it's an essay about our fathers. So he's talking about how, his father made him love the faith, and he tried to do that for Kendrick. And there's one line where he almost has, like, he's so proud of Kendrick because he personified, what he taught him, but he almost had this regret that he made him too good, because mm-hmm. maybe if he made him less good, he'd still be with him right now. So it's extremely, extremely powerful. And then he has this line in there where he talks about the shooters, the two shooters, he goes into a little bit of their history with their dads. And they had no, they didn't have relations with their dads.
Right.
One of the shooters on Twitter a couple days before mentioned in this kind of mysterious tweet how he missed his dad. And then the other shooter, and I believe that one was actually a she who had, quote unquote, transitioned into a he. And then the other shooter wrote, 666 on his garage, and then burned his mother's car. And he has this great line. He says, I can't know for sure, but I don't think there were many camping trips in those homes and deep conversations about the love of God. And that's actually true. So those two boys, had almost no relationship with the father. One was in prison, and then the other one was completely out of the kid's life because he was adopted, and the adopted parents weren't much more involved. So you see this like dichotomy in that story between the virtue of what happens when you raise your kids in Christ and the lack of virtue and the insanity that ensues when you don't give them that spiritual health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very moving. I'm so glad you included that essay because, while it's not a well-known name, as, for example, a Paul Scalia would be, it's nonetheless, it's incredibly moving, and it does give you a sense of, you look at Kendrick's life as opposed to the life of the shooter, both children of God and both whom God created, and how did one go so wrong, and how did the other, inspire this young man, to give his life for his friends. And
right.
Only someone who was, trained to be a Christ-like man, could,
right.
Could do that. But, I just, what you've said has sort of brought to mind, we were talking about this just the other day with a friend, when it used to be, it was very common, like my dad was part of the Holy Name Society and my mom was part of the Altar and Rosary Society at the parish.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and most men in the parish would have been in the Holy Name Society, or we didn't really have a very active Knights Council, but there was the Holy Name Society and the Altar and Rosary. Mm-hmm. And and they were more, there was a spiritual aspect and assistance to the parish, of course, and, did things that the parish needed done, but they were more fraternal and social in nature than anything else. And it's been sad for me to see so much of that go by the wayside. And, when you couple that with things that are sort of a constant distraction and temptation for men away from the faith. I was just looking at something, Pornhub's hits on their site since the coronavirus lockdown started have gone up more than 1,000%. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, my husband, who is an IT engineer, early in his career worked for a Catholic elementary school, and he came home one night and he said, oh yeah, I had the fourth and fifth grade boys added again, which meant he had every filter, known to God and man on those computers in the computer lab, but he could tell when there were hits on porn sites. He would get reports like, this is how many, hit attempts we had between 12 yeah. noon and 2 p.m. And, and again, fourth and fifth grade boys, he said, trying to access the most vile, vulgar websites you can possibly imagine on the school, on the Catholic school computers. And, it's when you think of how easy it is now for men's, for their human sexuality to be disrupted and distorted, their views of women to be disrupted and distorted. You it's terrifying. And porn being as addictive as it is, I do think it is one thing where I think men don't feel worthy of practice of the faith. They feel like this whatever the sin is, it's a sin that has kept them away from God. And, you know, I don't know if you have any insight into that after compiling these essays. How do you bring away from the church men back into the fold? And are there any, you know, social organizations or fraternal ones that you see as being, you know, things that men not only will benefit from, but that they'll be interested in, right? Because it's like, again, you know, my first guest was, we were talking about chastity education and how some of the books from the 70s just made chastity feel like the books were so dorky that no one would pay attention to them. So was there anything you picked up in your research or compilation that gave you hope, or that groups that you think are doing good things with men?
So I'll tell you that the one, if you read the book front to back, I think that there's one sort of practical thing that's going to sort of stand out in people's mind, and that's the rosary. It's quite incredible how many of these. I'd say, I'm going to take a guess, but if there's 23 essays, I think 19 of them mention how important the rosary was in the life of the family. You know, and I think, you know, one person kind of puts it funny. It didn't matter how many, you know, kids were screaming, and you know, how many Hail Marys you could actually hear. The fact that my parents, you know, set aside some time to pray the rosary or to pray at all was so instructive to their formation. I haven't done it yet. My oldest is 5, but I think we're just about ready. We're going to start that maybe a decade. Every single weeknight,
right?
Or once a week. So that was one practical thing that I pulled out. My big message. I'm also, here's another. I've decided this week I'm canceling cable, right? So like,
yeah, we did that a few years ago. We walked
right,
away.
I'm
from
looking.
It.
I'm looking at the culture. I'm paying attention. And if you know, I make the point in the book that this funny. I sort of say this. Someone might sort of reject the premise of this book and say, "Well, if a man isn't living a Catholic life, then that's because he doesn't want to, and he's not going to do that. Why would he pass something on for his children that he doesn't want for himself?" And I say, "But there's a funny thing that happens to men when they have children. They don't just want to be better for themselves once they have children. They want to be better." For their children, they want to be better men for their children. So we may, you know, I might be perfectly okay with eating junk food and staying up late, but I'm not. I don't want that for my child. Mm-hmm. And actually, I don't want to do it for myself anymore because my child's looking at me, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
having children makes you a better man. And once you do that, and you really want to give them the ultimate example, what I'm telling them is that. You've been given the most precious thing in the world. Why not look into that? Because most men who leave this behind, the real tragedy is that they do it before they even know what it teaches. You know, these
right.
men don't even, they can't even articulate the truths of the faith,
right.
but they think it's superstitious and they don't think it's for them. So my big message whenever I talk about, you know, evangelization and turning to Christ and creating a Catholic culture, is no one's going to do it if they don't believe it. So my
right.
main message is look into it. Like, spiritual reading is a real thing. Like, you live in the year 2020. You can read any spiritual writing that's ever existed you get access to it in 5 seconds. You know, the fact that you sit down and you watch, you know, reruns of The Office every night instead of doing that should be a little bit embarrassing to you.
Right.
And you should, and my main message is to look, what is the Catholic Church actually teaching and why is it teaching that? And once you believe it's true, you'll want that for your children.
Right. Well, in these final seconds, Tyler, can you tell our listeners how they can purchase your new book?
CatholicFatherBook.com.
CatholicFatherhood.com, published by Ignatius.
No, Father Book.
Oh, Father Book. CatholicFatherBook.com. The author is Tyler Rowley, and I'll put this up on our podcast and Facebook pages as well. The book, Because of Our Fathers, 23 Catholics Tell How Their Fathers Led Them to Christ. Tyler Rowley, thank you so much for being with you. Being with us, rather. Okay, God bless. Bye-bye.
Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. What's there to say?